Hello, so we're back with Michael Niehaus. We're going to talk about management and that kind of stuff for Windows 10. Where should we start?
Well, why don't we start with deployment?
That's probably a good place.
People we started with the session yesterday on deployment where we talked about a few different options for deploying Windows 10. The biggest change this time around is we're really interested in doing in-place upgrades for deploying from, say, a Windows 7, Windows 8, or Windows 8.1 machine and going directly to Windows 10 without using your own deployment process or custom images or anything like that. Trying to come up with a simpler way of deploying Windows 10.
I think that's probably something that a lot of folks out there actually would really appreciate, a simpler way of being able to do deployments.
Yeah, it's been a fairly common customer request that they want to be able to move to the new OS, but they don't want to have the huge project around it to build the image, to build up the deployment infrastructure, to do all that. They want to be able to leverage their existing infrastructure, which they could do. They could use System Center 2012, 2012 R2, MDT 2013, and just create a simple task sequence that says upgrade. And they could do some pre-processing, post-processing on that to get the machine ready for the upgrade, do the upgrade, and afterwards just do some final checks to make sure that it's all set to go. But that basically allows them to shift their focus to what really matters to them, which is going to be the app compat testing. I mean, we certainly believe that the compatibility with Windows 10 is going to be really good, but there's still the critical apps inside of an organization that they're not willing to trust us on. They're going to want to test those out and make sure that they actually work. So we can at least let them focus on that area rather than all the infrastructure, imaging, and all the other work that goes into it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we have to remember that, you know, countless organizations across the world rely on Windows. It's a huge platform, and as a result, their applications just have to work. So it's often one of those things where the entire end-to-end deployment is slowed down by just trying to get two or three applications through some large testing lifecycle. So the more time that we allow for that is probably a better situation to be in and way better.
Yeah, and that's kind of some of the logic behind providing previews early, that now people can set it up already and start testing out those applications and make sure that they work with even the earliest preview builds as we're still in development. So overall, we think that those in-place upgrade processes will work pretty well for hopefully the bulk of customers. We know that there's still a fair amount of doubt out there, so that's why we're encouraging people to try that out with the preview. So take a Windows 7 machine, do the in-place upgrade to Windows 10 just to see what that process looks like, and just to gain more confidence with that type of setup. Of course, we're collecting lots of telemetry around those upgrade processes as people are deploying it, so that we can continue to improve the process ourselves to deal with any problematic areas that we can see through the telemetry so that it just keeps getting better over time.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of the places where previously it's not necessarily one of the areas where you could kind of say, once I'm doing this upgrade, I can actually get a level of help here from Microsoft to help my application compatibility. You're feeding into that process early, and therefore you've got the ability to actually affect the final code that comes out. So hopefully, we're actually going to start to see more folks doing their application testing just to see whether things work. We'll pull the telemetry back, and maybe there's major bug fixes that we can put in place to ease some of the upgrade process for people. And that's the intention, I guess, with the whole thing.
Yeah, and we got into that conversation in the session yesterday, talking more about the deployment process, but also the feedback process of as you go through and test it out on a bunch of machines to make sure that you submit the feedback on any areas where you've run into problems or any concerns that you have. There's still some work to be done as we continue to work toward the RTM release, so we'll continue to refine the upgrade process, but the goal really is to make it very fast, very reliable, and really easy. I mean, that's the goal. So the initial session recording that we'll publish here shortly that goes through the nuts and bolts of how the process works is kind of one step forward, but we also want to start publishing more samples around how do you use Config Manager, how do you use MDT to do an in-place upgrade of an OS. So we'll publish some task sequence samples soon that explains just exactly how we would envision that happening in kind of the large-scale enterprise environments where not only do you want to do these upgrades in bulk, but you also want to be able to monitor them, track them, and manage the content distributions, all those areas that System Center is particularly good at, you want to be able to leverage those as part of your Windows 10 deployment, even at the testing phase, so that you can test all that out, see how it works end to end.
It's kind of, I guess that's one to be, from all of the, there's a lot of guys out there who are deployment guys, and I think they're probably wanting to kind of understand a little bit, are we going to completely change the way that we do deployment? I think that's a...
Right, and that's one of the feedback items that we're getting fairly frequently, because these deployment guys are used to, as soon as we provide a new OS, they get a new ADK, they get a new version of MDT, they get a preview version of System Center, and they start doing the traditional OS deployment from that point in time. This time around, we're saying in-place upgrade's more important. We're going to focus on in-place upgrade for the next few months. We'll still allow you to do those traditional deployments, but we're going to wait a little bit. We're going to provide those tools sometime early next year, so that if you still want to do the traditional wipe and loads and building your own golden images and doing the MDT and Config Manager deployments of Windows 10, traditional way, you can still do that. You're just going to have to wait a couple of months as we get farther down the development cycle to try that out. So the focus from now until then is really around that in-place upgrade to put it through its paces, make sure that it works out okay.
And so in terms of the actual in-place upgrade and how that's actually working, are there any kind of headline steps that we should explain a way through with the in-place upgrade process?
The nice thing is it does all the work for you. So basically you're just telling it to run setup.exe with the necessary command line switches to tell it to automatically upgrade, do it quietly. If the process fails for any reason, it will roll back, but we want it to tell us when that happens. So call this script when it does a rollback, or call this other script when it finishes successfully. So we put the hooks in place into the upgrade process to allow you to instrument that yourself to tie it into a task sequence. That's where those samples come in to show you how to do that, to make sure that you can get the feedback in either case, if it succeeds, if it fails, and then proceed from there. So those are the samples that we'll publish. The basic process is going to be the same regardless of whether you're on Windows 7, Windows 8, or Windows 8.1. It's mm-hmm. going to automatically capture all your user data, all the operating system settings, all the applications and their settings. So there's really no configuration that needs to be done. It will also migrate the drivers from your existing OS to the new OS. It may take the opportunity to replace some of those with newer versions that are fully supported by Windows 10 as part of that process, but we've even provided some additional switches for that too, to say, here's an extra driver folder that contains the enterprise's selected drivers that we want to inject as part of that upgrade process, or we don't want Windows to put its own drivers in place. We want it to preserve all the existing drivers. So really trying to give you more control over that upgrade process to let you tweak it the way you see fit.
And I think that's probably what most people are going to want. They're going to want to have that in that situation where they can say, you know, this is the driver that we've been through, and we know this is going to work on our systems because we bought 500 laptops at exactly the same time.
Sure.
And we're happy with this version of the driver. So those folks are going to go through that.
So we're trying to provide enough flexibility for that. But that's kind of the in-place upgrade process in a nutshell. The main thing for us is that not only does it migrate everything, but on the off chance that it fails, and failures happen for the most bizarre reasons, like in my case, I ran out of battery power while the machine was upgrading. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was literally 5 minutes from the end of the upgrade process and my machine ran out of battery power because I was upgrading a machine while I was sitting listening to a keynote session. You would think that would be a bad thing, that Windows is not in a particularly good state at that point in time. It's been half upgraded, but as soon as I plugged it back into power, turned it back on, it recognized that something didn't go right, and it rolled back all the way to my previous OS. So nothing was lost, except some time, because now I had to repeat the process to move forward to the new build. So we put a lot of work into the reliability of it to make sure that regardless of what happens, if it's the machine doesn't quite start up properly, if it loses power, if there's a hard drive issue, whatever the issue is, it will always roll back to the existing OS. So it's designed to be fairly resilient to those types of failures. Presumably. That allows the IT person to then look at the logs, figure out what happened, and try again. So, like in the MSIT case, they've done some broad deployments of Windows 8.1 using the same basic in-place upgrade process to take all of our internal machines from Windows 8 to 8.1. Hundreds of thousands of machines upgraded that way, and the success rates were tremendous. I mean, like 97%+ of machines successfully installed on the first try. But even for the machines that failed, maybe it was an incompatible driver or an incompatible app or something where we blocked the installation, it would be non-destructive. So most of the time, the users didn't even know it happened. So there were no help desk calls. They would just look at it and say, oh, okay, we understand that issue. We'll take care of it and try again. So the amount of help desk calls would drop as well. If you compare that type of success rate against even the traditional wipe and load deployments, they're usually not quite that good, even when you're doing the full wipe and load, because I mean, weird things happen. You can have network glitches. You can have machines that aren't plugged into power. You can have cables come disconnected. Whatever the issue is, you're going to have some percentage that don't succeed. And the fact that we can get to that same success rate, both with the traditional and with the in-place upgrade, is a good sign as we're moving forward. But we are hoping to do more work with our early adopters to gather more data from them on their large-scale deployments to see what the success rates they're experiencing, just so that you can compare to see that it's not just Microsoft that's seeing 97%. You want the rest of the world to be able to see, to be able to show the same results, that they're having good success doing in-place upgrades.
Yeah, I must admit, my personal upgrade inside of Microsoft, I've had a couple, and things have gone... We've had varying levels of success of applying the upgrade. At one particular time, I had a rollout. It was pushed out to my machine completely automatically, overnight. Unfortunately, obviously, we've got quite a large campus. That was actually exactly the same time when the core networking infrastructure for my building was being updated. So we got part of the upgrade through. I actually came in the next morning. I knew that the Microsoft IT were also upgrading the network in the building. So I came in the next morning, and literally I had a message telling me that the installation rolled back. And that was it. I just got back into my machine, and I was absolutely fine. And then the next day, the upgrade completely applied, and I was on to the next build. So those things really do happen. There are those glitches, and it's really cool that it's actually just built into the operating system to deal with it. The logging, I think, is super important, because I was going to say, is there a log file that you can actually look into as an admin in order to be able to understand exactly what the cause of an upgrade failure was? And we're presumably keeping all that information.
Sure. Yeah, and we did talk about a third area in the session yesterday. We talked about the in-place upgrade being the preferred route, the traditional wipe and load deployment still an option, and we'll be providing tools for that later. We also talked about a new setup for device provisioning so that we could take a machine out of the box and then customize it to turn it into an enterprise device without deploying an enterprise image over the top of what came on the OEM system in the first place. So the idea is that we can provide some new tools for that as well to help with these typically choose-your-own-device scenarios where you don't have corporate standard models of devices anymore. You allow the person to pick whatever device they want. If you're the deployment guy inside of a company, the whole idea of choose your own device is a nightmare to you, because you think, ooh, I've got to package up the drivers for every single model of machine that comes in the door, and I'm going to do nothing but extract drivers and figure out how to deploy the enterprise image to those. But if you can do a provisioning process instead of just transforming the device into an enterprise device, you don't have to worry about that. You just add the enterprise configuration, the apps, and roll the device in management to make the machine ready to be a productive device for the user. So that's one of the other areas that we're working on. We did a brief demo of that in the session, but it's something that will continue to evolve as the previews progress to add more capabilities to that.
So just to drill into that a little bit, what are some of the capabilities we're thinking about? I'm thinking typically enterprises are going to want to go and make sure that those devices are able to connect to the network. They're going to be able to, receive email. They're going to be the top things.
Those are exactly the types of things we want to be able to do, create Wi-Fi connections, VPN connections, email profiles, enrolling it in Configuration Manager or Intune or some other MDM solution so it's a fully managed device, potentially even change it into a full enterprise installation of Windows. So really whatever it takes to make this into a productive machine, exactly what settings are most important and what types of provisioning tasks need to be performed is something that we're still working out. But yeah, the goal is to try to make that as broad as possible.
And I presume that that telling us a little bit about that through the user voice option is a good way to go. If there's certain areas that you actually want us to focus on, then that's probably the best way to get that information in to Microsoft so that we can actually start to bring it into
the
process.
Certainly once that goes into the preview builds, which should be about the same time we provide the ADK and the other tools, that you can then try it out and start providing feedback on the exact implementation that we've delivered through the initial previews and suggest other areas that we might need to branch out into.
So whereabouts else is there? What else do we need to think about for the kind of the next 15 minutes on the management of the OS? What kind of things are we seeing else that's changing?
The main focus for us is around choice. Mm-hmm. So we've always said that Windows was, I mean, the best operating system for enterprise management, and we put probably 20 years of work into making sure that it is the best for doing that. So we've got a lot of technologies built into the OS, like Active Directory and Group Policy and all of these other capabilities for managing the OS. But things have kind of evolved. So we now have much more mobility. So devices that aren't on the corporate network, that never connect to the corporate network, they're always internet connected, they're always talking to other people through email or whatever other services, but it's a kind of a different setup. So they may not need the full traditional, difficult management of those devices. You don't need the full control of the device. You really just need a lighter weight management solution. And that's kind of where we were heading with the MDM support that we added in Windows 8.1. Let's provide MDM support, so that you can do mobile device management through Intune or some similar service, leveraging what's already in the box for Windows. What we implemented in 8.1, though, was really focused primarily on BYOD scenarios, so we didn't have a tremendous amount of corporate controls for that. The goal with Windows 10 is to greatly expand that, to say we can fully manage a Windows 10 system using a mobile device management solution. We can also tie in identity with that as well. So we can use Azure Active Directory, joining a machine into Azure AD and actually logging in directly into Windows with an AAD account. So you end up with these parallel choices. You could do Active Directory, Group Policy, and System Center for your traditional enterprise device, but for a mobile device, you could say, I'm going to do Azure Active Directory, Intune, and that's all I need. The devices are just out on the internet. They're logging into an internet service. They're talking to an internet management solution. It's all in the cloud at that point.
Yeah, I think this has always been one of the things that Microsoft has done brilliantly, which is we actually have, we don't just give you a script that you have to go and do just this. We actually give you a toolbox. And inside of that toolbox, sometimes you're going to need to take out a hammer. Sometimes you're going to need a screwdriver. They're probably both going to do the same job, roughly. But actually, you get to use the right tool for the right time for you. So when we have a world where we can actually completely control everything through group policy, but we also have the same kind of settings available through the MDM solutions as well, that actually takes us into a place where you get the most choice for whatever's appropriate for your organization.
Sure, yeah, and we wouldn't expect all organizations to say, well, I'm going to move all of my machines over to MDM.
Yeah.
I mean, they can pick and choose even at the machine level. Mm-hmm. This group of people, they're going to use Active Directory, Group Policy, System Center. This group of people, they're mobile, so let's use the Azure Active Directory and MDM solutions. We also would expect a lot of organizations are going to use a hybrid setup, so not just separating by machines, but I need to connect my internal Active Directory with Azure AD to synchronize between the two so that I get additional benefits even when I'm logging into a corporate device on the corporate network with my Active Directory account. We have Office 365, Intune, other Azure-based services, and being able to provide that level of integration between the two means you can get single sign-on into those services. So no more having to type in your password again when you launch Outlook and connect into Office 365. Windows knows that there's an association between the AD account and the AAD account, and it just transparently deals with that.
Yeah, it's one of those, actually, when you start using AAD, it's quite amazing that you can actually log into thousands of different services using your on-prem credentials, and it does just kind of works and comes together. Those levels of extension are really neat, actually, when you think about it.
The synchronization is surprisingly easy to set up, which is one of the things that was demoed in the keynote on Tuesday, where it's literally just walked through the wizard, and now it's synchronizing your entire Active Directory with the cloud, so that it's literally a 15-minute task to set it up. We expect that to be fairly popular with organizations because of the way it integrates with the Windows Store. Hmm. The expectation with Windows 10 is that we'll provide a business software portal where you can acquire apps for your own organization's use, and we'll use Azure Active Directory as part of that setup so that you log in with an AAD account to be able to see your organization's apps. You install them using that organization ID, and the org continues to own those licenses.
So in the case of, I guess, somebody coming into the organization, working for a while, and then leaving, presumably we've got some controls then that suddenly fall
into license management's a good part of it as well, where we can actually go in and see who's using the licenses, what they've been acquired for, and if someone leaves the company, loses a device, whatever the scenario is, maybe they just don't use the app anymore, you can reclaim that license and give it to someone else. So all of that would be through the business software portal to expose all the apps that I've acquired, all the licenses, where they're being used, and allow me to manage those.
It's interesting the way we start to think about the different types of apps as well as we start to bring things together. So being able to take an app that's available from the portal, from the business portal, and actually install that. You can also obviously go and still acquire your own personal applications if you connect a Microsoft account, for example. So we're moving into a world where actually a device can be almost used by multiple people at the same time, I think, is the multiple personalities.
Yeah, and even if it's only used by one person, you're one person using the device in two different ways. You use it for work, you use it for your personal stuff. And we expect that most companies will allow that type of usage pattern where they want to be able to provide them organization apps, but at the same time, they don't want to prevent them from putting their personal apps on there. There are other organizations where they say, oh, no, these can't be used for personal use, and we'll certainly provide the controls and policies to allow them to turn that off so they could say, this can only be used with a corporate identity, with corporate apps, no personal stuff on there. So it's all about really providing those options to the organization to let them pick and choose what should their employees be able to do, what shouldn't they be able to do.
It's one of those things that Microsoft has, when we look at the different form factors that we deploy to, and that you can actually have Windows running on a desktop PC, for example, and those are, we're going to, I think, start to see a lot more kind of task worker-based scenarios around those. We certainly start to see them. I used to work for a bank. We used to have lots of desktops and call centers. So you're probably going to have a deployment method, a management method, which is going to work on that particular type of group. Maybe you won't allow the employees to run their own personal apps there. Maybe that workload's a little bit more secure as well. But then you're going to move through these other stages where you may have maybe lighter weight management because it's a device which you've provided to people inside of your organization. They're highly mobile. They're going to connect from multiple different places. You don't want to provide massive levels of lockdown, but you do want to kind of have the control and the understanding of what's actually happening. The other end of the spectrum, maybe it's going to be just something where they've brought their own device into the office. They're connecting it up. They just want to get access to basic email.
Yeah, and there's certainly different needs for, say, a call center or a help desk versus an accountant versus a group of salespeople. And they all have different usage patterns and different needs, and we really should be able to provide different solutions for each group based on how they're using the devices and how you would expect them to get their job done.
Yeah, it's never going to be a one thing or an all thing. So the final kind of 5 minutes of this section, what are the things that you'd like to kind of leave the folks that are watching with to kind of give them some places to go and think about things?
At least initially, we want to make sure everyone's trying the preview, so get involved with that. The functionality that we have now is primarily, the deployment and management functionality at least, is primarily focused on the in-place upgrades. We'll get into the other scenarios later on down the line with traditional deployments and the volume capabilities through the business software portal. So those are a little farther out, nothing to be done there yet. But start looking at Azure Active Directory, understanding how that works, how you can synchronize that with your organization's on-prem AD so that you understand what it's there for, how it works, and how to set that up, really so that you're ready to start using some of these capabilities when they come later.
Yeah, that's the Azure Active Directory area is actually somewhere which is kind of super interesting to me. I mean, we have 350 million users of Azure AD already, which is kind of phenomenal when you think about it. And it's doing 18 billion authentications per week. So it's a service that people are getting used to, they are using. The parts of that you're going to want to go and investigate to move forward are actually already available. So those investigations, you can start to, if you've not already moved your workloads to Office 365, then hey, go and investigate that now, give it a try, understand exactly what that's going to do for you. And we're going to be enhancing that service to do even more as we move forward. So it's not learning you're going to lose.
There's been quite a few sessions here on Azure Active Directory. If you haven't been to any of those or haven't watched the videos for those, certainly check those out because they'll provide a good background as well.
Yeah, and we've also got tons of stuff on the Microsoft Virtual Academy as well. So if you're not here at TechEd, then you can go and use that in order to be able to.
Yeah, and those will certainly get much more into the how-to. So here's exactly step-by-step. What does it take to set it up? So that would be great.
Yeah, cool. Michael, thank you very much for joining us and taking us through some of the deployment stuff. We're going to be right back in a couple of minutes' time. We're going to talk through security with Chris Hallam.